Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hello. Hello, we are back. It is episode 97 of the Indigenous Vision podcast. We are two aunties coming together, sharing our thoughts and our perspectives through our human bodies. My name is Melissa. How are you doing today, Suta?
Well, I've got a beautiful blessing of some kind of whirlwind spirit. It's abundance. It's chaos, but I think it's like organized chaos, and it's all really good things. I've been really busy back and forth. I'm actually home to just get some office work done that I probably could have got done in like a hotel or even a campsite where my MiFi device worked, but I needed clean clothes and different clothes. I only packed a small bag. Like literally, I was so proud of myself going from the huge rolly suitcase to like a small duffel bag. And I felt like I like kind of harnessed your energy of you just walking around with your backpack. And I'm like, yes, that's what I want.
That's what I'm doing tomorrow. I'm going to LA for an overnight and I just bring a backpack.
It's amazing. I want to say I'm low maintenance, but my makeup bag is huge. What are your essentials how do you fit it just into a backpack for multi-day with like face care, skin care, all of that? Cause I have like creams and oils.
Well, I minimize that. I take a break on like the hardcore 7-step regime and I just keep it cleansing moisturizer. Okay. And I have travel size makeup. So I have little versions of everything that I need. So I've been doing this for so long. I've gotten it down to travel size. I know exactly what I need. I don't bring extra anything. I just bring exactly what I need. And that goes for clothes too. And sometimes I like wear 2 layers of like skirts when I get on the plane. Mm-hmm. So I really just like to travel light. I hate carrying bags and like big things. I even don't even like carrying large purses or wallets. I just like small things that I can move about the world super easy, but still have everything I need. So I'm just going for an overnight and I can pretty much do a week long journey somewhere with like a small carry-on.
Wow.
Provided I have a washer and dryer, or I have access to a washer and dryer.
Yeah. And that's what I came home for is I just, like, I think I was around campfire smoke my first night. And so I knew it that first night as I was being like smoked by the campfire. I was like, my small amount of clothes is not going to last as long as I thought. Cause I love the campfire smell, but after a while, it's a smell that makes me sick too at the same time.
Yeah. For me, it's bug spray. And I get really insecure about going on a plane and sitting next to everybody when I smell like the bush or a bunch of chemicals. So I try and like wash everything before I get back on a plane or something. So I'm taking a quick little flight down to LA to see a concert.
Who are you seeing?
Angel Olsen. I'm in like my soft girl era right now. So this is the party that I wanted you to come for like our mutual birthdays. This is like the meeting point.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh. This, you know, I left my calendar open in August and in July, I'm like, I'm just going to do the project work that's like immediate and like has been on my desk for a while. And it's wild. It's been a wild summer. It's not going to slow down until September for me.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that you're busy. Like, what are you doing? You're just having a pit stop at home. And then where are you going?
Back to the Blackfeet Reservation. I was there, let's see, last week. Oh my goodness, it's been such a long week. But last week I did a really awesome hike in the Bob Marshall Wilderness. And I went to go check out some caves and some natural features and see if there were any pictographs or like artifacts in the area. And I want to get my eye better at looking and identifying like flaking for arrowheads and tools. But I went to the Shoto area for a little while. I did a really hard hike. It was 73% incline. And it's no like almost
I would die
up. Yeah, I just didn't look down. I didn't look down. The scary part, like there was some kind of like the way the rocks were made up. It was like that cementy rock. So it looks firm. It looks like it's actual cement, but then you put some weight on it and wiggle it around and it actually starts wiggling. And so I am the trusty guide who needs a map, but I had my trusty guide who just makes his own trail. And he is the mountaineer who is kind of expert at getting up on those top summits. And he took the drainage and it was perfect because this mountain is one of those rocky mountains that has just ridges that go to a top that you can't access the ridges. The ridges are really hard and steep. And he found a drainage. He just looked at the mountain for a little while and he was like, yep, that's the way. And he kind of points it out to me and I'm like, it looks straight up. And I'm thinking like around and a slope and some zigzag patterns, you know, like how trails are made. But he looked at the drainage and said, that's the easiest way. And it was like, as soon as we hit the drainage and got out of the, even the trees and the shrubs and these little rocks, it was a hard surface. And even there was some water trickling down it. Something about that rock just made our boots grip just perfectly. And so it was a really easy climb up to the top until I looked like down. And there was that one video I shared where I'm not ever like, I hardly look at me when I'm doing the selfies of the backgrounds. I'm looking at my background and there was one spot where I made it to the top of the mountain and I kind of did a pano of my background and I saw what I had just climbed up. And then I saw my face change in the video. I'm like, whoo, it was hard. And I really challenged myself and my body did great. And I'm really proud. But then, yeah, then I thought I lost my ID up there and I was fine in the parking lot. I didn't think, cause I always keep an ID in my pack just in case my mom's request. And I thought I lost my ID up there, but I didn't. My son jumped in the truck because I was supposed to go to Canada and I didn't want to go into Canada without a driver's license. Cause I would, you know how hard they are with no insurance license and registration type thing. And I didn't want to like ruin my driving record if I happened to get pulled over. And I told on myself at the border, like, am I okay to do this with no? And they're like, nope, you'd definitely be, well, in my words, riding dirty. And so I turned around and I didn't want to deal with that. You know, I really have zero tolerance for like stress. And if it like climbing the mountain was easier than encountering my supposed hassle-free border crossing, you know, and I asked it, like, they said I could go across with my tribal ID, but it would not work as my driver's license. And I would get in trouble for not having a driver's license. And I was like, oh. So turned around, went back and got my son and my paper copy. And I was just about to, I was like surfing the websites of the DMV and thinking I need to order a new one or make an appointment or something. And my son jumps in and he's like, here you go, mom. And I'm like, the last time I remember it is putting it in my pack to get up the mountain, making sure I had it. And I really actually want to punch a hole in it so that I can connect it to the inside of the backpack somehow. Cause I don't want to take a whole wallet either.
I think when you punch a hole in the license, it invalidates it.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. I've had a lot of ID drama. So I know like you can't tamper with, and I've actually had two driver's license from Canada and the US and I got in trouble for that one time.
Oh my goodness.
At a border.
What a pain.
I know. I was like, which one you want to see? They're like, that's illegal. And I'm like, oh, So I had to get rid of my Canada license and just keep the American.
It was too much hassle for me to even want to think about. So I just turned around and I missed the blood tribe ceremonies, the Ekogatsen, but I made the Blackfeet ceremonies. I did get my face painted, but I've been wanting to go see friends and family and experience that too. It's been a couple years. So
you need a passport so we can go other places too.
Yeah. And that's what I had. Cause I have a Nexus appointment, but it's not until October. Yeah. And so I'm carrying around my conditionally approved Nexus card based on my appointment next month.
Right.
feels like it's October next month.
It's going to be October in 2 months. Isn't that wild? I got so excited when I saw the Halloween decorations. I did like a little like, ooh, move in like the store aisle. And I was like, here we go. It's my season and it's my birthday month. So I got super excited. Well, I just love watching all of your videos. I'm like, I can't even imagine what it must have taken to climb that high up. I mean, I mess with like these little mountains out here in the desert, but like I've never gone that far up without like help halfway or something like that, you know?
Yeah, it felt like a 10,000 foot mountain, but it was only 8,000 feet and 750. But I went from the river bottom to the top of the mountain. And so, yeah, it was cool. I'm still a little sore from it. But the next day I was ready to go out because I had like no pain in my body. And I had like, it was just kind of that good sore. And I'm like, yes, I want more. And then I went to go get my son. And my wallet. He found my ID, which was amazing. So there was no crisis or anything. Nothing was lost. Still don't know how it got in that backseat pocket though, because I did have a pop can of cold brew. My mountaintop brew is a can of cold brew, and somehow it got punctured in my pack, and so there was like brown water seeping down my back, and I just took some stuff that it got wet out, and I thought the brown water was from this pack of smokes that I keep to give out, but it wasn't. It was a cold brew that got busted. And anyway, my got everything back, everything is fine. And then I took Penn State Vet laboratory team out for a field site visit to look at the different kind of terrain that we're working with in our contaminant environmental monitoring project that we have with the CWD and all of that other stuff, heavy metals and pharmaceuticals. And they were impressed. They said that they really appreciated the thought that I had put into designing the project, because there's a QA, a quality assurance professional on their team, the laboratory and veterinary and biologist and training team. They're also dog trainers. And it's just a different study because it's a 1.5 million acre study area, and there's 20 or so sample sites drop down from the 40 I originally intended, but it's just not possible with the amount of money we have and the team of people that we have. Yeah, I did a really short version, like what we could fit in one day, looking at the arid, semi-dry environment at the lowlands, and then like the subalpine lake and stream type environments and sampling. And those have different sampling methodologies. Those have different impacts on like how the scat that we're looking for, how it cures essentially, like how it dries out, and then how the wind moves it and the viability of the scat when we actually get it back to the lab and get it tested for all these different contaminants. And so just writing all of that down, it was really cool to get their, you know, kind of pat on the back of like, you did a good job on trying to think about the elements, like even into the direction that our water flows, because we're at a triple continental divide and we supply the water for the Gulf of Mexico, the Hudson Bay and the Pacific Ocean. And so we're the, you know, like I wish the world would listen to me, like we're like maybe 70 miles from the Rocky Mountain front, but already experiencing pretty low flows, pretty high temperatures, pretty a lot of nutrient loading into streams already. And so this is, that's like the, you know, just headwater information to the whole grain belt of America down to the Gulf of Mexico. So got the pat on the back from them to that. Yeah, I've thought about a lot, and I also graciously requested that they fill in or like give me an order or tell me to tighten this up or you know, decontaminate better here. Let them know my personal protection equipment, like the PPE and decontamination equipment concerns that we're having, and just they're thinking about it and looking at it. And it was cool because it's not the one lake system with two sample sites and one kind of sample collection method. It's this huge 1 million acre area, and it's different. So that was really good. And then I went to knock on doors to see which tribal department my project would fit under, and got invited to some bison tours to explain my project and how all of these contaminant layers that I'm collecting and creating a visualizer for will also help create reports and management strategies in terms of like bison reintroduction and how we manage our herds, because we have a really cool, I did mention it the last podcast, I think, that we've got like now one of the country's first free roaming wild herds that the Blackfeet Nation and I believe Glacier National Park, and I think Waterton Park is in on it in Canada as well. But that's, yeah, like besides Yellowstone's bison, we now have those Blackfeet bison. And so I want everything I'm doing eventually to care for them as well. And this range management and ecosystem contaminant monitoring is part of that. But luckily right now, bison and antelope are the ones that don't get CWD. So we're safe eating them.
Wow. Beautiful work.
Isn't that a lot?
It is. Yeah. It kind of makes my brain rattle because I'm not 100% sure what everything means, but
I'm so sorry. I do that a lot. And then it's just one of the Penn State vet ladies just said, just keep talking and sit down with the people who have the patience for you to hear you out, and the right people will hear the right thing. And I'm like,
yeah, if you're listening and you know, or you want to help, donate to Indigenous Vision. That's probably one of the best ways, right? Like go to our website, indigenousvision.org/donate.
Yeah. And what that would cover, because what I'm really worried about with that CWD project, well, first of all, I'm worried about like general capacity all the time, keeping Melissa paid, keeping these episodes coming out, keeping our updates, our newsletter, all of the other awesome stuff that you do. And then our team of mappers. And now we have the land in New York that we're turning into the experimental management and food, like it's an experimental traditional ecological knowledge management and food forest focus. So it's pretty cool. But what I'm worried about with this project is that we're developing quality assurance project plans for the first time for working dogs that do conservation work at the EPA level. So a department will have a quality assurance project plan on how to replicate and implement conservation dog work to collect these samples. And they're not finding the things, they're finding the scat. And then we take it to the lab and the lab finds the things. And this is also one of the first times that traditional ecological knowledge will be mentioned in an EPA quality assurance project plan, a QAP. And I always joke to that, I'm going to get my QAP together. And I think I got that from my first project officer. She was also a Native lady. I will get my QAP together. But yeah, it's like there's a couple of firsts in there. So the working dogs, which I'm really staunchly behind, because this country has always had way more dogs than people think. And right now we're in a management era where we're very hands-off and we don't allow dogs in national parks. And I understand that, because if you go to your local dog park, you'll see how many horrible owners there are and people just don't take care of their dog's waste. They don't take care of their dogs most times. And that's why we have so many rescues, right? And then also like training and how to socialize your animals to be good dogs out in the open and around people and children. Unfamiliar things, like how does your dog react to surprises and stuff like that. But dogs have always been out in the wild and have always been in, like they, Indians and dogs, I think, and plus wolves and what are our other major species that have bison that have been removed from like air quote unquote wilderness is very, very hands-on management. And for the last 150 years or so has been the most neglected, abandoned time for the land to not have our presence. So if we think going back to the dogs, do you hear that? My phone's blowing up. I'm sorry. if we go back to the dogs, like and you look at the camps that I'm mapping, and each woman having, you know, 2 to 6 dogs. And I read a really funny early settler journal, because I really like mapping those Indian encounters and friendship stories there too. And one settler was like, you could hear, and I think I need to go back to the exact quote, because he was pretty disgusted that this Indian guy and many other Indian guys at the fort were being followed around by like 12 dogs each. and it was a normal thing. That's how many dogs are in our pack. And so if you think about that, and I'm out berry picking, and 10,000 other Blackfoot women are out berry picking, and we all have our dogs with us, like, are dogs really a disturbance in the wilderness, or is it just bad training and bad owners? And so, yeah, we all, it's, I'm not trying to beat anyone up here. It's just like, we need to be trained, and we need to be educated on how to live with our environment, because we have had many dogs, and we have had many people, and lots of hands-on management in national forests and like these national parks and wilderness areas. And it's been gone for a while. And I think when you look out the window and you see the smoke, you realize something went wrong somewhere in one of those decades.
Yeah, just a little bit wrong.
Yeah, just a little bit wrong.
Oh, the fires are terrible right now. Everything is just, I've really been trying not to pay too much attention to the news again, because it's just everywhere. I'm not caught up on my TV shows. I wanted to go see the Barbie movie, but I just didn't yet. I really wanted us to do a recording of a podcast post Barbie movie. Have you seen it yet?
No, I really want to, though.
I heard it's triggering men. So aww. I'm really curious to see what it's all about.
I trigger men too.
Me too. All the time.
Yes. I'm too loud. I can't shut up. What other boyfriend insults have been hurled at me?
Like totally not that though. Like, as someone who's known you for so long, you are not loud. And I've never been like, oh my gosh, I wish Suta would shut up.
It
sounds like it's a them problem.
Yeah. I literally can't stop talking, but I'm always like engaged and excited for the conversation, I think, which can be a little exhausting, but I need someone to match that energy, right? That's compatibility.
Right.
Like, what do you want to be with me for? And I've always been like this. So why did it change? So,
wow. So much you're doing out in like Blackfoot country. I feel like I'm just kind of taking it easy. In the summer here in Vegas, it's so hot. I had that meeting with the ladies from.
Yes, I really wanted to go to that. Please tell me.
Yeah, Fifth Sun Project, and two of the instructors, Dave and Lou, gentlemen who are Indigenous people as well. We just all got together yesterday to have this meeting about the future MMIW, MMIP self-defense classes, because Indigenous Vision has agreed to sponsor for the next 5 months because they want to make this a monthly event. So we were discussing how can we maximize participants and get as many people involved. So we're working on having it at different locations across the city. This next training is going to be still at the University of Las Vegas in collaboration with the Native American Students Association. So we'll probably have a studio for that. They kind of worked out this deal where they could use this huge open studio space because they were trying to charge the university. It was like, everybody who's coming in here needs to pay. And they're like, no, this is supposed to be a free event. This is for Indigenous people. Once they saw what kind of happened, they're like, okay, we get it. We're going to open up our studio space to you now. So August 18th is the next self-defense class. It's a Friday here in the Vegas Nawuvi area. If you're in the vicinity, you can check it out from 6:30 to around 8:30. The same facilitators, our instructors will be there. You can check out our Instagram to learn all about that. I'll be sharing a video. And it's totally free. You have to sign up through Eventbrite. That's the key to get into the self-defense class. And then there's going to be another one in September that I'm going to be participating in. It's going to be at the Southern Paiute Center. So this is going to be focused on not just the Indigenous community, but older women as well. So we're going to be trying to focus on different demographics of Indigenous people. So the September class, Southern Paiute Cultural Center will have as many grannies as we can gather is pretty much what we're trying to do. And then the month after that, we're going to try and go for single mothers and their children so that we can do a mother friendly slash child self-defense class. And then in November, my dream is hopefully to get like Cola Shipping Tower down here and do like a beautiful outdoor huge class. So that's why I'm applying for this grant this week to hopefully get it so that we can accommodate her. But these are just some of the ideas that we were talking about, because we just see such a need for it. And the turnout was so amazing. And everybody was just like, yes, I want to learn this. I want to be a part of this. And we're going to be making a slide deck to utilize a projector to kind of do self-awareness, situational awareness, human trafficking tips on how to be aware of that, because that's even something I'm not even 100% sure of what to do when you see certain markers on your vehicle, stuff like that. So we're working on all of this stuff to kind of make this a traveling self-defense class that comes with all of these things, starting off with the situational awareness. And if there's people who are non-Indigenous who just happen to be there, they would learn about MMIW, because it's also about the awareness of the crisis that's currently ongoing. So I'm pretty excited for this, really hoping to get more money for that. If you want to donate, again, go to our website, indigenousvision.org/donate. You can totally throw out a couple $100. It goes a long way for instructors, for event room bookings, and the venue fees. Like, it really, really helps. Every dollar seriously helps.
Cola, it would be so amazing, because I just, right? I really love her perspective as a ex-officer. I'm not sure if she still an officer.
I don't know.
But she used to be a police officer. And so that makes a big difference. It's not a side of the table that we see very often when we're talking about missing, murdered Indigenous women, mm-hmm. epidemic and what's happening, and then how to protect ourselves. But I've had lots of other officers. The Phoenix officers were really supportive about self-defense classes and getting, because they held their meetings at the Biltmore offices, where our office is also located. And so they always saw me working, and I always saw them, and we would razz each other about, you know, stuff. And I always like to push the limits with legal people, huh? But yeah, living life on the edge. But
it's looking good though. Like,
I love the way you all, I really am sad I missed it, but work kind of jumbled over, and it was a good jumble over, because things just lined up. And but I like the way you guys arranged it and organized it with situational awareness first, and then focus groups to register as you go through, because it's a different environment. I've taken self-defense classes at martial arts centers with just community members, with knowing, like, it's like MMIW is just my own little secret that nobody knows about at that gym. In that self-defense course, I'm just one of the people. But it's different when you start to get all these aunties and these grandmas, and then they bring their granddaughters and they bring their nieces. And most of our classes that we got to hold in person when we were still Indigenous Vision pre-pandemic was a really cool mixture of like 8 to 9 year old girls, and then like 70 to 80 year old women, and then some auntie ages in between. But it was the breakdown and the different focus groups are really important, because I realized that our older ladies were getting attacked in a much different way and being targeted in a different way, because they're like, you know,
vulnerable.
Supposedly more vulnerable. And then the women our age were being attacked by people that they knew, and were in scenarios where they were like in home environments and holding children type things. And so those are completely different scenarios. And we tried to keep those last 15, 20 minutes to ask group questions of like, what scenarios are you in? Do you need help? Because these are not one-time things. Like, women are going home to violent situations and needing to know how to survive those, which is really scary.
The misogyny is out of control right now. So to even vocalize that in a public space mm-hmm. is really empowering, to just mm-hmm. talk about it even, which is more what I'm pushing for with the slide deck. Like, I wouldn't mind going there and being like, let's just talk about everything that's happening, because we're taught not to talk about these really hard things.
Right. They're shameful things that we should never talk about. And mm-hmm. don't ever say you were an abused woman, because it makes you look weak type things. Yeah.
And it really drops the fear. Like the fear will dissipate the more and more that people talk mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. what they're going through or been through or scared of, what might happen, the anxiety. Like there's just so much that we could cover in like the first 10 minutes of a class yeah. to kind of get everybody loosened up and being like, you know what, this is a mm-hmm. super safe space to talk mm-hmm. about this. And that's exactly why we've created this space. Mm-hmm. So we're going to focus on that. And hopefully it will extend into next year. If we can get enough, if I can get enough grants going, oh my goodness, I would love to just have this a regular normalized thing.
Right, right. Because also we have, there's a lady, I don't know if it was to Eagle River High School in Pablo or a community group in Pablo, Montana, who is also interested in this. And I need to return that call. We actually need, it's big enough that we need a full-time person, right? Like, and we need that money to support their salary to answer all these calls, because I need to get that class organized. And then the ladies in Browning, Montana, again, are interested as well.
That's so cool. Maybe after a couple that we do here and like, you know, tighten up and mm-hmm. learn and just kind of go by how we mm-hmm. learn from the actual class. We can like package it and like yes. send it up to you to be like, this is exactly what you can do. And it should be super easy.
Yeah. And that would be, I would love that level of capacity to like offer the 6-week rollout instead of, because right now it's, if I sell 2 t-shirts, I can fund an instructor for an hour or 90 minutes, right? That's the level we're at right now. But it would be great to have, like, we have 20 opportunities for 20 communities or groups to hold their 6-week long sessions, self-defense training sessions. And then just once or twice a week or whatever they negotiate between them, we can try to get the instructor paid. Because these instructors, they're black belts, or they've advanced really high and have a lot of training. One trainer for our Life Spa camp with the girls in Arizona, she was like an ex-officer and military, and the guy was military, and him and his wife did this duo, and they had so much training behind them and years and decades of experience of scenarios and probabilities and actual experience in being attacked. And so, yeah, we try not to just find any run-of-the-mill self-defense. Like these people love what they're doing and have invested decades of training into their skills. And so as Culture Humility, we don't want to ask anybody to work for free. We don't want to ask anybody. It's really an insult to ask people to work for exposure.
It is.
Especially people from poverty-stricken minority communities that have trouble eating and paying bills
right.
to begin with. Yeah. there's another episode back there. I can't remember which one it is that we've kind of talked about that more, but yeah, it's Culture Humility. I want to pay people, what they've the value of what they've invested in themselves, because I appreciate it. So.
Thanks for checking out the Indigenous Vision podcast presented by Indigenous Vision. We are an educational nonprofit based out of Arizona and Montana, and this is our official podcast. This is just one of the projects that we do have going on. If you would like to explore more of what we do, visit our website, indigenousvision.org. You can also sign up for our cultural humility training that's coming up this October 17th. All are welcome to attend. Again, thank you for listening to the IV podcast.